Okay, Hare Krishna. So, purport for Prabhupada. Of course, this is the first canto, and we're always explaining this as a preface to the Bhagavatam. The first canto tells us under what circumstance the whole work is being written. Of course, the work is Srimad Bhagavatam. Under what circumstances is it being produced? That's what you find in the preface. Also, what is the purpose of the book, the work, and what are the qualifications of the speaker? What qualifications are expected of the audience? So all these things are here in this first canto of Maharaj Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami. They both came in contact with Krishna before they were born, and very great personalities. And then the circumstances that Krishna has arranged that Maharaj Parikshit is going to leave his body. Kali Yuga has come, so a new incarnation of the Lord is necessary to protect the devotees. So all these things are accomplished in the first canto. Yeah. Chapters 1, of course, the introduction is wonderful. Prabhupada's introduction is a nice biography of Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. Very, very wonderful work for those who are not a part of this Vedic culture to introduce them to everything. And he also gives a nice summary of the first verse, you know, so absolute truth as the cause of all causes, as opposed to the absolute truth as a supreme controller. Because I remember even as before I was a devotee, the idea was, yeah, God is more powerful than the devil, but where does the devil come from? You know, so it was like, ah, there's the answer. Okay. So, in the first introduction, Prabhupada discusses that. And it starts off with, of course, with this dialogue between Suta Goswami and the sages, and they have their problem. So they then ask him for a solution, which he tells them, you know, is he answers six questions. So that's the first three chapters, you know, problem, meet the guru, questions, and explanation. And then, but then they say, okay, you say Srimad Bhagavatam is the solution, but wait a second. Vyasadeva already wrote, and he already compiled all of the Vedas. He divided Veda into four branches. He compiled the histories, Mahabharata, Ramayana, 18 Puranas, 17 Puranas, Vedanta Sutra. So where did he get the impetus to do more, and why should he do more? And then his son, you said he was a great, the person who heard all this, but he was already a liberated soul. So why did he have to undergo such an austerity to study such a great work? So then Suta Goswami then says, okay, I'll explain it all to you. Yeah. And he then explains how Vyasadeva was feeling dissatisfied because the Puranas and everything else, they talk about Krishna, but he's not emphasized. And it's very indirect. It's like, you know, opening a vegetarian restaurant and never getting around to the point of like inspiring people to, you know, to offer their food. You know, they're cooking vegetarian, you're giving vegetarian cooking classes and people are, you know, are cooking vegetarian food, but they're never getting around the point of, you know, figuring out the real thing is prasadam, you know. And so then he of course, you know, with this suspicion, Narada came and confirmed everything. And he told him he should produce one work, which is pure Krishna Katha. And so then he described the content, gave him a summary, asked if there were any questions. And Vyasadeva said, yeah. I said, can you please tell me how you realized all this personally? And Narada Muni said, yes, I'll tell you, because it'll be good for your spiritualization too. You know? So then he explained his own experiences, how he also realized Bhagavatam by association with the Mahabhagavats. And by then taking that and traveling all over the world, Parivrajakacharya, by getting personal impetus from a little brief meeting with the Lord. And then because of that, he went on, whoop, you know, and became fully realized. You know? And that's the whole story of how the Bhagavatam was going to be produced. So then Suta Goswami says, at the end of chapter 6, he says, as a member, he says that, you know, so then Vyasadeva spoke this to his son, you know, Sukadeva Goswami, and Sukadeva Goswami then spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit. and I was present at the same time. So yata yata idam yata mati. So I will try to make you experience this as I experienced it. And it's a very important text, because he's not going to reproduce it with precise accent, meter, everything else like the pundits who know the Vedas do. There still exist these pundits who memorize the Vedas backwards, forwards, you know, with different breaks. They chant them together. And so it comes down precisely as it has for thousands of years. UNESCO or somebody has declared it actually a heritage of the human society. But they don't know what it means. Yeah, maybe just reproducing it precisely. So what he's saying, and this is what the Puranas are generally concerned with, is not so much to reproduce the exact text as it is, but yatayatam yatamatim, but to make the audience experience it as you experienced it. So you may take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, whatever, but in the end, you know, they're supposed to see Krishna and Krishna's abode, you know, face to face, like that. So he says, I'll do that. Then he starts off in chapter 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yeah, 7, describing how Vyasadeva, Suta Goswami describes how Vyasadeva sat down, how he could see in his meditation then, in his auspicious ashram, Krishna and Krishna's external energy, and how the external energy was completely under Krishna's control. So again, a very super important verse to scholars, that we're maybe all coming, many of us coming from Christian background, we all accept that God's a person. Yeah, it's very kind of simple in many ways, you know. But other people know, you know, scientists and Vedas and everything else is describing some controlling principle, Ishvara Parama, you know, Ishabhashim Vidam Sarvam. So here it's very clear. There's the Ishvara, he's a person, and the external energy is separate from him and under his control completely. So then Vyasadeva, Suta Goswami says, so I'll tell you, sages, you know, about a little bit about the perspective here, because the real Bhagavatam, you know, I'm going to describe is the one that I heard where Sukadeva Goswami spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit. But let me give you this, you know, the history of the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, so you can appreciate what a great person he was to hear the Bhagavatam, and the whole ambience which involves the disappearance of the Pandavas. So he starts like that, but that, of course, you know, kind of like maybe because he's seeing his audience and everything else, let me give a little broader perspective so they can really appreciate the situation like that, and they can really become fixed in their intelligence to hear this properly. So he takes kind of a step back and he describes the how Maharaj Parikshit, not only his birth, but how he was attacked by Ashvatthama. And then, of course, that goes into whether or not to kill Ashvatthama and the punishment of Ashvatthama. And then that goes right on then with all the other events that happened, giving water to the departed ancestors, Kunti asking Krishna to stay, and Krishna finally agreeing to stay when Yudhisthira also implores him. Then going and seeing Bishnudev leave his body, which of course all happened within 1 year after the battle. And then finally, okay, this is all taken care of. Then departure of Krishna for Dwarka and arrival in Krishna in Dwarka. And those are the kind of the most sweetest chapters we see in this first canto, because there it's describing Dwarka and other prayers and other relationships, always kind of like a little bit like, what's the word, like fear or something, awe of Krishna. But in Dwarka, he's God, whatever, he's our father, but there's no fear like that or any kind of, it's very, you know, respectful of him as being greatest, but it's like little children, when their daddy comes home, they're not afraid of him, he's their daddy, you know. But he's greatest, he's much more than we are. So in Dwarka, a nice vision of that consciousness. So that's what we make as one unit. We have our first unit is Sutra to the Sages. Next unit is Narada to Vyasa. Next unit is the general background, you know, very remote background. Drona, Kunti, Bhishma, Krishna going to Dwarka, Krishna arriving in Dwarka. And then next chapter, which is going to be something, which is now we're on chapter, is this 14 here? Yeah. So 13, 12, yeah, 12, 12. Then Vyasadeva or Sri Goswami says, oh, well, heck, let me get back. Well, actually, the sages say, this is very, very nice, but can you get back to the birth of Maharaj Pariksit and everything like you said? So he goes back then to the birth of Maharaj Pariksit and the horse sacrifices that were performed. So this is kind of like a flashback. This occurred, appears, before Krishna left for Dwarka. Yeah. So birth of Maharaj Pariksit, Yudhishthira performs horse sacrifice to get free from the reactions of the battle, put everything in proper perspective. And then we hop ahead. It looks like about maybe like, 30 years like that, because Maharaj Pariksit was born. And now then we have Pandava. So then the next chapter is Dhritarashtra quits home when Vidura comes back and preaches to him. But as he comes back, Yudhishthira asks, what's his name? Asks Vidura for boon. He says, please tell us about our family members and relations in Dwarka. And so it says that Vidura didn't talk about that because bad news comes by itself. And already the Yadu dynasty had left this world. So and that means, and so in this chapter, we're going to see that Arjuna comes back and tells Yudhishthira. So it looks like the Vidura came and talked to Dhritarashtra only, a few days. Well, it says that Arjuna was gone for 7 months. So within that 7 month time, Arjuna was gone. He hadn't come back and given the news about the Yadu's departure. But Vidura came and took Dhritarashtra out, led him to some success. He knew it had happened like that. So Dhritarashtra's leaving home was very, 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 very close to the events of Arjuna returning, which he'll do in this chapter. And so when it says that Yudhishthira was present with his brothers, when Vidura was preaching, that means everybody but Arjuna, because Arjuna was away. He hadn't come back with the news yet. So then we'll see in this chapter, Arjuna comes back, and then Yudhishthira appreciates what happened. Arjuna keeps it together just long enough to tell him the news, and he goes into Samadhi. Yudhishthira keeps it together just long enough to get somebody else appointed as king, and he goes into Samadhi. Everybody else, they depart. So everybody's departing, And the departure of the Pandavas, departure of Krishna, and that finishes this unit. And the final unit then is this chapter, this canto, is how Maharaj Pariksit, how Maharaj Pariksit receives the age of Kali. Now he's grown up, he has his own kids, he's running the universe and the earth. And then, of course, he meets Dharma and Bhumi and Kali. And then he, next chapter, reward and punishment of Kali. He gives him his place to stay, where he can engage in his nefarious activities. Then Maharaj Pariksit is unfairly cursed by Sringi, which is all, of course, an arrangement of Krishna. And then he, again, that's the next point after is he actually meets Sukadeva Goswami, I think, like that, four chapters altogether. So he meets Sukadeva Goswami, and now that's the end of the canto, and everything's ready. After all this discussion, wow, we're ready to hear, Sukadeva Goswami answer Maharaj Pariksit's question. What is the duty of a man during his life? The unalloyed duty, and especially at the time of death. Like that. Jai. So right now, back here again, we're in this chapter of Yudhishthira. He's seen these different omens, and he's... a lot of this seems to me are more like kind of general things. And he's suspecting, speculating that maybe, like Narada Muni indicated, that Krishna has left the planet. So, of course, if we're chanting this verse with feeling, we'd all be like in such intense emotion in this verse, like that. And after this, he'll start talking to Bhima directly. And there, the different omens he's talking about are more things that you can see, taste, smell, and hear. It's kind of like, conceptual things. So maybe because Bhima's a real down-to-earth guy, you know, you can see this happening here. Then finally, Arjuna comes and he starts to speculate with him about things. Although he knows what's happening pretty much, but he tries to make all kinds of alternatives, you know, to facing the difficult situation like that. Right? So Prabhupada's purport, kind of some things here. It's actually very interesting. It answers some questions for me. Prabhupada's purport. As we have discussed many times, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, has many plenary expansions. And each and every one of them, although equally powerful, executes different functions. In Bhagavad Gita, there are different statements by the Lord, and each of these statements is meant for different plenary portions, or portions of the plenary portions. For example, Sri Krishna, the Lord, says in Bhagavad Gita, whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself to deliver the faithful and to annihilate the miscreants and also to establish the principles of occupational duty. I appear in every age. That's nice, because usually Prabhupada says Dharma, he said religion. Abandon all varieties of religion, which confuses people. But here it says abandon all varieties of occupational duty. I appear in every age. If I should cease to work, then all humanity would be misdirected. I would also be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all sentient beings. Oh, whatever action a great man performs, common men follow, and whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. End quote. Prabhupada says all the above statements by the Lord apply to different plenary portions of the Lord, namely his expansions such as Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, Anirudh, and Narayan. These are all he himself in different transcendental expansions. And still the Lord as Sri Krishna functions in a different sphere of transcendental exchange with different grades of devotees. These are all his different transcendental expansions. And still the Lord as Sri Krishna functions in a different sphere of transcendental exchange with different grades of devotees. And yet, Lord Krishna, as he is, appears once every 24 hours of Brahma's time, or after a lapse of 8,640,000,000 solar years. In each and every universe, and all his transcendental pastimes are displayed in each and every universe in a routine spool. But in that routine spool, the functions of Lord Krishna, Lord Vasudeva, etc., are complex problems for the layman. There is no difference between the Lord's self and the Lord's transcendental body. The expansions execute different activities. When the Lord, however, appears in his person as Lord Sri Krishna, his other plenary portions also join in him by his inconceivable potency called Yoga Maya. Oop. Turn the page back here. Yeah. And thus, the Lord Krishna of Vrindavan is different from the Lord Krishna of Mathura or the Lord Krishna of Dwaraka. The Virat Rup of Lord Krishna is also different from him by his inconceivable potency. The Virat Rup exhibited on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is the material conception of his form. Material conception of his form. Therefore, it should be understood that when Lord Krishna was apparently killed by the bow and arrow of the hunter, the Lord left his so-called material body in the material world. The Lord is Kaivalya, and for him there is no difference between matter and spirit, because everything is created from him. Therefore, his quitting one sort of body or accepting another body does not mean that he is like the ordinary living being. All such activities are simultaneously one and different by his inconceivable potency. When Maharaj Yudhishthira was lamenting the possibility of his disappearance, it was just... In pursuance of a custom of lamenting the disappearance of a great friend. But factually, the Lord never quits his transcendental body, as is misconceived by less intelligent persons. Such less intelligent persons have been condemned by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita, and they are known as mudas. That the Lord left his body means that he left again his plenary portions in the respective dhammas, transcendental abodes, as he left his virat rup in the material world. Joy, Shabbat, joy. So when I was looking at the actual word-by-word translation here, api deva rishina adistam, whether, as the demigod Narada instructed, saha kala ayam upashtitaha, that time that Narada indicated, has it arrived? Yada atmana angam akridam Bhagavan Ushesh Rikshati. So the word is Atmanaha, his own self, and the word is Anga. So it doesn't occur in the translation. Is he going to quit his earthly pastimes, as Devarishi Narada indicated, has the time already arrived? So actually the Atma, is he going to Utsish Rikshati? Is he going to quit his Atmana Anga, you know? So the word Anga means like limb. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you may know there's big discussion of this by Krishna's Kaviraj, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, Ete Chamsa Sakalpum Sam, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. So there's talking about ete chanksa sakal, ete chamsa sakal pum sam, because there's an anksa, there's a kala, and there's an anga. So one is a portion, one is a portion of a portion, and he's talking about that. And the word anga, he's talking about how in some ways there's not a lot of difference maybe between, you know, the anksas and the things like that, but Anga, being a limb, indicates a more intimate connection, like that. Mama Ivangsa, Jivabhuta, Mama Ivangsa, Jivabhuta Sanatanaha. Yeah. So these Angsas, Krishna says, in this world are my parts and parcels. Mama Ivangsa, Jivabhuta, Jivabhuta Sanatanaha. Yeah, I forgot part of it there. Yeah. So, and they're bewildered by the material nature. So this is the big question about the different aspects of the Lord and how he incarnates everything else. And even, of course, our modern, you know, pundits, you know, because we live in this world, okay, and, you know, in some ways you don't need to know a lot of this, you know, a lot of these things in some ways, you know, because you plant the seed in the ground, the corn grows, you know, you harvest it, you dry it out, you grind it up, you make cornmeal. From that you make chapatis, you pick some, you know, guavas from the trees, and you have guavas and cornmeal, and the cow, you get milk and butter, and okay, finished. And you can, but that doesn't satisfy the soul, you know. The soul, like Vyasadeva, again, we've already heard that. Vyasadeva, even though he described all these things, fruitive activities and flowery language, and so many things like that, you know, still it wasn't enough. He wasn't satisfied. And so you start looking for satisfaction in different, you know, remedies that are available, you know, alcohol, intense sense gratification, different ways. And you keep looking in so many ways, and you don't find it. So you, but Maya, she has an unlimited number of temporary pleasures. They're all temporary, but she has unlimited number. So as soon as you finish off trying something out, well, that didn't work out just because, of this and that. If I try that and this, then this, that might work out this time, So we go on, this one after another, like the donkey chasing the carrot. And Maya just puts a little closer to us. Oh, okay, I'll just step forward one step and like that, So we keep on going like this without satisfaction. Brahmande Brahmatikon, Bhagyavan Jeev, around this Brahmanda. And so we're not finding satisfaction. But then maybe in the mode of ignorance, we're trying to find satisfaction in the sense objects. In the mode of passion, then we're trying to find satisfaction maybe more in the psychological things in terms of name, prestige. And so then the simple necessities of the body become multiplied in so many ways, because you have to have the right drink. You have to drink the Uncola or whatever it's called, Coca-Cola, whatever. All these things. And wear the right clothes and associate with the right people. So it becomes complicated, to gratify the mind. And the mind, so many subtle satisfactions. And then it goes on like that, and we come to the level of gyan, and we discover, that, there's the pleasures of the middle speculation on this level are even greater, all the way up to the Hiranyagarbha. You begin to conceive that behind everything there's one unifying template. There's a seed, the garbha, Hiranyagarbha. This is one big conception that, as we understanding, is all mentioned throughout the Vedas. Carl Jung and I guess Kant, they're all talking about these. Was it Kant talking about certain irreducible intellectual concepts that exist behind the gross manifested world? And then Jung talking about archetypal images. And so, these things, they exist. Carl Jung, his school of philosophy, psychology is still quite respectable. And it's, probably liked it. He's coming to think, there are certain things that just don't go away, like certain concepts, masculinity, femininity, their combination, all these things. And so then the Hiranyagarbha is that there is a seed behind everything. If we follow that worship, through this describing the Vedas, we'll come to the level of Brahma, and we'll be able to experience along with Brahma, Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Just like we see the deities doing artik, and then the curtains close, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, probably it's described how Brahma and his followers, the demigods, Indra, Varuna, they can see Garbhadakshay Vishnu every day, and adoration, the worship going on. And then after it's finished, the curtains close, they turn back to do their work in the universe on behalf of the Lord, and so many things, until the next artik. So then, is that all? Narada, is there something beyond the Hiranyagarbha conception? Because if that's all you have, Shurdakshay Vishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, is still materially tinged on comprehension. And it will take you to Mahavishnu, but unless you develop a personal relationship with him, then you'll come back again. When Brahma comes back. So all these different Vasudeva, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Sankarshan, they all have different dealings and different relationships. And in our culture, we may know them by different names or different experiences, Lady Luck, what else like that, Destiny. When the World War II, when the Americans dropped the atomic bombs, some Japanese wanted to fight, but the Japanese emperor said, "The American divine wind has blown, and there can be no reply." Because that was the metaphor, cultural metaphor for destiny. At some point, you realize that destiny is going a certain way. So then, there is again destiny, karma. So higher conceptions, which human beings can appreciate, and then they are forced to appreciate. I don't want to be a human being. Well, you got the body, so you're going to appreciate these things, and without satisfying your relationship with them, you won't be satisfied. The bear is happy just eating, but you're not like that. And so then we get more satisfaction too. So then all these different conceptions of expansions, incarnations, everything else. And of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, this is a question we have many times. If Krishna is standing in front of Arjuna, why does he say, surrender unto that Lord who is the oldest, who knows everything, who is the cause of all causes, like that? Because it's not Krishna. Chinta beta beta tattva. Anga, the limb, we can't separate it from the body. It has no meaning, But at the same time, we can't equate it with the body. That is, in practice, this is a very easy thing to understand, but it's inconceivable in some ways logically, how to figure it out. But when we start going on relating to Krishna, we understand, that we're in a difficult situation, we're trying to do some service, we really see the possibility of organizing a big festival and attracting so many people and changing their lives, but simultaneously to different problems. So we're not praying, oh Gopinath, like that. We're praying, oh Krishna, please have this demon drop dead and take birth someplace else where he can enjoy himself without disturbing me, and my service. So that's a certain portion. Shakti Vesha Avatar, Yamaraj. So we begin to understand how to relate to Krishna, and then Krishna is satisfied. Krishna can do his job, properly, And it's described again when he comes, he brings all these portions with him. When he goes, the angas, is he going to give up his anga? Yudhishthira has a very, very mature understanding. Is he going to take his limb out of this material world? Because he's also appreciating that the form that we're appreciating of Krishna is his anga, it's his limb. Krishna has unlimited potencies, pastimes. More than potencies, he has other qualities, more than power, other qualities which are more intimate. May not be displayed in this material world where power is the necessity for convincing people or dealing with them. His friend, his joking characteristics, his constancy as a friend, so many things. So you just is wondering, is he going to leave the drama, take his hand out of the puppet like that? The Virat Rup stays here. It's the objective material incarnation of Krishna. Injecting material incarnation. And Lord Shiva, there's a lot of details about this in Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami in the Madhulila. I'm kind of going through that now. It's chapter 20 through 28, 29. It's a lot of discussion and many details, about Lord Shiva. He's describing there that Lord Shiva is the seed-giving father of this material world. Not Krishna, but Shiva is, an expansion or incarnation of Krishna. And more detailed descriptions there. Sometimes I was reading today, it's quite astonishing. I read it before, but now I'm just beginning to appreciate it. So anyway, that's kind of, as we go on, understanding all your different positions and functions. And I'll kind of finish off here. I remember Prabhupada was giving one big Pandal program, maybe in Bombay or something. And so many people in the audience, maybe 1,000, more than that, maybe 1,600 or something. And of course, many, ladies and older ladies and children and businessmen. So the recorder was going, that microphone, and the public address microphone was going. And public started getting into this, Swangsa, Debinangsa, Prakash, Taratmika Prakash. All the different kinds of expansions and incarnations and everything else. And so then he finished it off and he said, so do not think this is just sentiment. This is the science. You must understand all these things. Kind of challenging the audience. And then, as you remember, he leaned back, something like that, and he said kind of to himself so that the public address microphone didn't pick it up, but the tape recorder picked it up. So Prabhupada said, you must know all these things. And he kind of leaned back and said, but not right away. In the beginning, there's God. He supplied my cereal and takes care of me when the ghosts are under the bed. And later on, But then later on, yeah, because there's different ways, you know. Krishna and Vasudev doesn't engage in Ras Lila pastimes. Yeah, you know? They're very different pastimes. So eventually, to serve Krishna properly, and even to get out of this material world, because the Paramatma conception, Garbhadakshaya conception, will not get you out of the material world permanently. Only Mahavishnu conception is enough to finally stay out of this material world. And we really realize that the God of Srila Prabhupada is the creator of the universe, realize that, really, you know, and have a connection to him, then we can stay out of the material world. Then after that, by worshipping Mahavishnu, we can advance to worshipping Lila avatars. By worshipping Lila avatars, we can advance to Sankarshan. And by him, we can advance to Baladev. And then Krishna and Dwarka, Mathura, Vrindavan. And so means improving our service, yeah, cause for Krishna. So that's kind of our summary of like what little comprehension we have of this verse so far. Maybe are the devotees didn't have any kind of questions or comments like that.
Okay, I've unmuted everybody on free conferencing. And if anyone would like to ask a question or make a comment, Marsh, class, please go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Thank you very much. Gandhari here. Hiranyagarbha, isn't he sometimes mentioned as the Virat Roop? And
it's the connection. Hiranyagarbha is the golden seed upon which the Virat Roop grows. It's just like the template, the skeleton for the airplane. It has all these different, metal rough form. And over that, you put the skin of the airplane, like that. And so then the Virat Roop and the Hiranyagarbha, are very intimately connected. You know, it's just one to the other. But the Hiranyagarbha, the golden seed, is behind the Virat Roop, which is the gross manifestation.
And isn't Virat Roop sometimes described as imaginary?
That's the point. Because it's the objective material incarnation of Krishna. Then he says, but of course Krishna never incarnates as the material object. You know? So it's a very subtle thing, like it exists and it doesn't exist. Yeah. You know? It's described that way. It's something which is created, you know. For example, like a little child, he's playing on the floor with his truck, zoom zoom zoom, you know, and his mother's ironing the clothes and watching some, you know, soap opera, and then the little boy stops and he says, "Mommy, where does my daddy go every day when he goes out?" Yeah. So he has no conception of work. And mother's thinking, and she says, "Well, you know, he goes and plays with his friends, you know. So is it false or not? You know, in some ways it's true, you know, within his range of conception, it's true, you know, and some, you know, like that. So same way, the Virat Roop is the incarnation of Krishna, but at the same time too, it's just something given for people who are very materialistic to begin to appreciate that the Lord has form, these kinds of things like that. You know, the bones are his mountain, mountains are his bones, like that. You know? So it's an imagination, but it's an incarnation in the imagination. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you for your description. And I also heard that the 1,000 arms or hands of Hiranyagarbha are actually compared to all the living entities that are within him.
Yes, yeah, Sahasra Sirsa, Sahasrapat, Sahasraksha. Yeah, because he has thousands of arms, and so our arms are his arms, you know, like that. And he's the person who makes them, creates them, maintains them, and we think we're so big and powerful, but no, he's the person that has all these, and we're just kind of using them like, you know, children use something that belongs to their parents, you know.
I don't know exactly how to ask this, but we discussed recently about Krishna's disappearance, how he left the material body. when the hunter shot him in the foot.
Yeah.
For anybody that knows about this, materialist that knows about this, they'll say, aha, you see? Krishna has a material body. I mean, it's like the perfect excuse to say, aha, see? It would appear that Krishna does things in such a way that, boy, if you don't want to surrender to Krishna, then he gives you all facility. So here's an excuse to say that, well, whatever was said before doesn't make sense because there's so many contradictions.
So, yeah, actually, that's the verse. What's the word? Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivisto matasmitur gyanam apuanam cha. In that one, no, Prabhupada says exactly that. He says, if you want to remember Krishna, he'll arrange the circumstances. But if you want to forget them, he'll arrange the circumstances so you'll forget him forever. Spooky. But he's so kind, you know, And Radharani is his compassionate nature, so she's always out to, like, you know, find some way to keep us remembering who we are. And but, you know, we have our free will, so it's a very tricky thing, very subtle, not to interfere with our free will, but at the same time to arrange something so we go back to Krishna. So fortunately, in the final conclusion, Radharani is more powerful and more tricky than Durga. Yeah.
I guess what I want to say by this is that it would appear that however you want to see the absolute truth, if you want to see him as Krishna, Krishna is going to give you the facility, every facility to do that. If you want to see Krishna as just like one of the other demigods, or Lord Shiva as being a god, or Brahma, or whatever, or that there is no God, all those things are there. You can just find them. And then if one can be convinced, even through the Vedas, through the Shastra. So it's just a matter of so that's one thing from our side. Then from other people's side, if someone is determined to be an atheist or determined to be, you know, a sense gratifier, then there's nothing actually that we can do about it. You know, Krishna gives them the facility and then they have to do it. We just have to present Krishna consciousness in such a way that if one has the shraddha, enough shraddha, he'll take it up. Otherwise, you know, he can find all kinds of reasons, even in the shastra, to justify his mode of thinking.
Yeah, I was realizing that, you know, before I was initiated. And suddenly I realized, well, you know, yeah, I have free will. And Krishna is not going to interfere with that at any level. You know? So if I want to, you know, there's not like nothing causing me. My choice, my independent choice, if I make this choice that I want to be independent and my own thing going, then I'm damned forever lost. You know? And it's very, the most depressing, you know, realization possible. You know, you couldn't talk about anybody, really. But then just a few days later, I read in the Krishna book that when the prayers for the personified Vedas are waking up Krishna, they glorify him for his different qualities, the foremost of which is his mercy upon recalling the conditioned souls. You know? So he has so many qualities, so many shaktis. You know? Durga just gives you what you want, you know, like that. So she follows the rules. You know? But then Radharani is more powerful. And he was saying, again, more clever and more determined than Durga in the ultimate issue, you know. So that and if we're cooperating with her, if we're like we're working as her agents, as her representatives in the Sankirtan process, you know, and she's encouraging Balaram and everything else, and then we may come up with something tricky, which, you know, for example, one devotee, I remember something, her father was like a pretty elevated official in the government of India, an agricultural thing. And he even arranged for, like, you know, the devotees to get a lot of fertilizer from Mayapur. It wasn't anything illegal, but he just told them, hey, this is opened up. If you go there and make this application, you'll qualify, you know. So he helped them, you know, to get fertilizer from Mayapur and so many things. But he wasn't a devotee exactly. He just, like, he was a very good person, and he appreciated that devotees were good people, you know. And so they took him to when the temple in Delhi was just opening. her husband, and their family, and then and him, and their family. So they all went, and they were very impressed. And then when Brahmachari asked him, he said, "Sir, you know, are you our life member?" And he said, "No." And the Brahmachari said, "Well, it's only like, you know, was 11,000 rupees, this and that, so forth, so on." And the guy said, "He said, well, you know, I don't want to become your life member, but here, everything I have right now, you can take it all." And he opened his wallet up and took out everything he had and gave it to him, you know. They went home, and about like 45 minutes, he had a heart attack and dropped dead. And so she told me that, of course, it was shocking, you know, but at the same time, too, the first thought that went through her head was, 45 minutes ago in the temple, he said, everything I have right now, you can take it all. So she's thinking that Krishna said, "Well, I want you," and you know, then he's saying, "Well, I didn't mean that. So I, you know, I meant well, all the money I had." And then Krishna would say, "Well, yeah, but you said in the temple, you wouldn't lie in a temple, would you?" And the guy would say, "This is not fair. You're cheating." And Krishna would say, "Yeah, yeah, I know. Come on, I got you. Well, okay." You know. So that's the kind of tricky thing is that Krishna has to figure out how to do. Maybe why he has these conversations with Balaram and stuff like that, huh? Because we have free will, but at the same time too, then Krishna is, you know, working out through his different shaktis and things like that to find some ways to get us back. And so, yeah, many times we get these inspirations how to do things that are really extraordinary because, you know, we're agents of Radharani, and so she's, you know, figuring out something. So sometimes, yeah. Even though people don't want to, we can figure out some ways to make them happy with Krishna.
I used to do multi-level marketing. Yeah. I'm sure this is the same with, you know, many different industries. But anyway, one of the things that they were saying is that it's all a matter of numbers. Don't get too hung up on if a particular person is not interested. Just move on. And if you approach enough people, then eventually you're going to get people that are interested.
Yeah.
So I think it's the same way with Krishna consciousness, you know, because people are at different levels. So, you know, no need to just beat our heads on the wall if somebody doesn't take. You just move on to the next person. You look for those that actually have interest. Otherwise, you can find every excuse to.
No, when Lakshya Tyan was traveling in South India, when Purport Prabhupada says, well, actually the text said the people weren't interested, so Lakshya Tyan moved on. And the Purport Prabhupada said, yes, a preacher sometimes can make this decision that people are not interested, so we can go to a more favorable preaching area. But sometimes, too, there is no more favorable preaching area. So I just, okay, Krishna's put me with these knuckleheaded idiots, so let me just go on. And, you know, and they're like Dhritarashtra, right? The Dura could not make Dhritarashtra into a pure devotee, right? Yeah, he could only raise him to the level of a Dura, like that. But that was good, you know. Yeah, and finish off and see the mistakes he made, see the bad things he did, apologize for them, make adjustments. Okay, and now maybe you can get some more mercy and become a pure devotee. So maybe, like you say, you won't make everybody pure devotees, but we'll give them a. You know, they're going to get some results, you know, from associating with devotees. You know.
Thank you, Maharaj. Does anyone else have a comment or a question they'd like to give Maharaj?
Yes, Krishna Maharaj. Krishna Maharaj, this is Rishabhadev Das. Please accept my humble obeisances. Maharaj, you mentioned at the beginning of the class that both Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami, they saw Krishna in the womb, and you also said that they were great devotees, right? I guess you're linking that. And we know that Srila Prabhupada said there was never a time when he didn't know Krishna. So can we generally assume that the younger it is somebody comes into Krishna consciousness, the more likely it is that they are advanced like that?
Well, I guess so. You know, I don't know exactly. You know? Yeah. Because again, somebody maybe they have like a contact when they're very young, maybe like as a child, but they're not very advanced, so it has its effect, but it doesn't have so much effect, you know. And somebody else, maybe they have like in their previous lifetime, they're quite advanced, and so the same contact with Krishna then, you know, really helps them like advance rapidly. where somebody else may just give them a seed where they're contemplating and they have to have different gross experiences during life and keep remembering that experience as a child. Then they come to a conception where they're ready to listen about God. So, you know, again, different people, I think, ready for different things, you know. But, well, actually it says also to Kapila, no, it says that Krishna pretty much manifests to almost everybody, you know, in the womb. There's one song in Bhaktivedanta Thakur, you sing, I saw you, but then I, yeah. But a little bit, reading the text, it's a little bit of like discussion. Maybe it's not everybody has that experience, but it's kind of like, in some ways, kind of like a common thing. When the child is in the womb in that terrible condition, then Krishna manifests as an Anga, as a Kala, as an Angsa. And then the person says, oh my God, yes, I'm going to surrender to you. I'll never do this again. It's like we do so many bad things. We overeat. We get in an argument. We become angry at somebody, and we have a bad experience, and we say, well, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to become angry at anybody again. But we do it again. You know? So, you know, opportunity is there, but it depends, I guess, on how much, again, and the soul is, it can happen very early, you know, but it depends how much the soul is able to take advantage of it like that. You know?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Maharaj, yeah. You have time for one more question. It got typed into the chat.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. What does Maharaj mean exactly? We have to learn how to relate to Krishna. Where is it written? You know, like, so in other words, just elaborate on that point.
How's it go? Yam yam bhapi smaram bhavam. No, that's not it. Yeyata mam, this is the most simple. There's so many places, but Bhagavad Gita is very simple. It's yeyata mam prapajante tam stataiva bhajami aham. As people surrender unto me, so I reciprocate accordingly. And of course, it shows in the picture, the whole Bhagavad Gita in the text too, that somebody is, he surrenders to Krishna because he wants money. You know, four kinds of pious people surrender to me. You know, some people relate to Krishna as the person to relieve you from distress. Some people relate to Krishna as the most curious thing. It's very, very inquisitive, you know, because religion, these kind of things, very, very curious, very interesting. And then somebody else, they have some knowledge of Krishna, real knowledge, so they surrender because this is their constitutional position and it's the right thing to do, to serve Krishna, you know. But again, it's like serving the king because he's powerful, he knows everything. But then as you go on like that, you may discover he has his own personal character. And then, like, you know, he doesn't want to relate to you now as, like, the king, you know. If something's happening, you're there after lunch with a business meeting with the king, and he's sitting there and he's saying, you know, oh, Bob, you know, I heard from somebody that your cousin was really, really sick. Everything's okay about that? And you go, yes, Your Majesty. And he says, no, call me Bob, call me Jeffrey, you know. So sometimes he doesn't want to relate as the all-powerful, you know. He likes it when Mother Yashoda is chasing him around with a stick in the yard. And she says, come here. And he says, I'll come here as soon as you put that stick down, like that. So they have a little debate going on about, you know, law and order, you know. And so that's what, you know, understanding this. Krishna as Aniruddha, for example, is the predominating deity of the mind. So the psychologists and everything else, they can begin to appreciate the, you know, the personal aspect involved in psychology. It's not just rats pushing on buttons and getting, you know, rewards, or Pavlov's dogs or neurons. No, there's something very personable about, you know, how we think and how we relate to people. So that's Aniruddha, you know? And it goes on like that to Pradyumna. It's Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Sankarshan. And finally, Vasudeva Sarvamati Samahatma Sudulabaha. Then we surrender and we come to Vasudeva. And then again, Mahavishnu, Shantaras, Ram, there's some, so we call it Vishnu Dasya Ras. Ram, there's some Sakya in the Dasya Ras. And then in Dwarka, there's some higher conception, but still, there's always Aishwarya. Consciousness of the greatness of Krishna. So we understand what mood Krishna is in, like that, you know? and then how that time in that place, how to relate to him properly. Is that okay?
Yeah, very nice. Thank you, Maharaj. If there's nothing else, thus we're quitting just about on time for our classes.
We've got 29 more seconds till it reaches 108. Anyway, it's very, very nice to be talking with all of you again. Like 3 months we were traveling and went to the Radadesh program, the Spain, all these higher education programs, Mayapur, and learned so much about higher education and ISKCON, what's actually happening with these programs, and a lot of effort. And hopefully the higher education, the ISKCONeducation.org website will be working out a lot more information soon. Because many nice things, actually practically speaking, from cradle to grave, you can have a career track in ISKCON now, education. You can grow up, you can go to college in ISKCON, you can teach in an ISKCON school, you can get a pension from an ISKCON school.
Oh,
and everything else, yeah. Yeah. Okay, thank you all very much, and we hope to be, if you want to contact us, we have our webpage, jayarama.us. Thank you very much for your association. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Krishna.